Chapter 15. The silence didn't last long. Artillery crashed behind them as Kinney ran, struggling to keep sight of his sergeant as he continued his manic climb up the slope. They had found a set of steps carved into the hillside, made of the same stone as the statues that now lay, reduced to neatly dissected heaps atop the peak. The steps were worn with age and too small for mog feet, but crunching a path up the things was distinctly easier than beating a route through prefabricated housing units. Kinney risked a look behind him, to the bottom of the hill, where a veritable Corvid army was amassing. It appeared as though somebody with some sense had organized the rabble, as they weren't randomly rampaging up the slope anymore. Kinney could make out a line of artillery units on the adjacent valley edge, barrels raised to lob HE shells in the general area he had just ran from. The shells were powerful, and the entire midsection of the hill erupted into a series of detonations that rippled along its frontage. The ground rumbled hard. Kinney scraped back down the slope several yards before he regained his footing and accelerated to keep up with Kronig. He hoped that the others had escaped the barrage. "What am I doing?" he thought out loud. He had no obligation to protect the sergeant. It didn't make the slightest bit of sense. If anything, he was causing more damage by abandoning his comrades downslope. How were Braga and Machado coping now? But there was something in him, something that kept reminding him of Bader. Kronig would not have done the same for him, but for some reason, that just validated his reason to back him up. It meant that he still had compassion. That, or he was just trying to convince himself he wasn't a complete idiot. "Sarge!" he called over external speakers. He couldn't be sure that Kronig had his radio switched on now, as he hadn't responded to several hails. "Wait up! Where are you going?" The higher up the hill they went, the more the surrounding architecture changed. The prefabs petered out, giving way to larger, more formal crypts, obviously owned by more important dead people. The few habitation blocks here were made from solid stone blocks, ornate carvings decorating their facades. Kinney glimpsed partially eroded scenes depicting crashed spaceships, overseen by heroic workers standing at the peak of a mighty hill. Each scene was a variation of the theme, proud men and women overcoming great adversity to build a great civilization. Everyone knew the damn story. Kinney lost sight of the sergeant as the stairs rounded a curve, cutting close to what looked like a well-constructed administration building. They'd reached the original seat of power in Solo Nobre, the small district where the original settlers laid out plans for their free civilization hundreds of years before. There was a lot of history there, on that hillside, and Kinney had always wanted to visit the place when he was a child. He was fascinated, as many others were, with the tales of greatness that were drilled into them from an early age. Now it just felt fitting that he would witness Kronig, a relic from the old era, die at the hands of foreigners in the place where it all began. Of course, that meant his own death would come right after the fact, which encouraged him to fight all the harder. He cornered the building and almost collided with Sergeant Kronig in D-99, who stood, quietly, in the shadow of the structure. The shadows were short, as it was almost midday, but the building was several stories high, so they were adequate to conceal the machines quite well. Kronig held a finger up to the front of his cockpit, to where his mouth would be. "Quiet." He stuck a thumb out, then turned it down, before chopping his hand in the direction of a cluster of larger buildings some 300 yards upslope. Enemy, there. Simple hand gestures, taught in basic. Kinney pegged what was happening. Kronig probably suspected that the enemy may be able to detect their radio transmissions, and he wanted to retain surprise. Kinney rattled his brain, couldn't think of why this would be a reasonable assumption, but the old lunatic had survived this long, so decided to go along with his paranoia. He made the OK symbol with his hand to signify that he understood, then zoomed in on the buildings. It was hard to concentrate, as his limited periphery was full of that floating monstrosity, which circled the hilltop lazily as artillery fire chased the QRF platoon away. Its forward edge pointed downslope all the while, like a cautious but amused parent watching its children play fight. The buildings looked quite similar to the one they stood by, nothing out of the ordinary, until he saw it. Movement. An AGRAV raised itself from the ground, shaking off a layer of silt that had settled on its hull, before disappearing into the wide alleyway between the nearest two buildings. Kinney hadn't spotted it at all until it shifted. The rusty red of its body, covered in local dust, had blended in perfectly with the decayed landscape. They had nearly run right into it. Kinney wondered if Kronig might try and bypass it on his suicide charge to the big fellow, maybe try and avoid all contact outside of punching the fortress in the face. But no. As soon as the thing disappeared, the sergeant was off, running after the damn thing. Of course, he wants to kill them all. Kinney lamented common sense before dutifully following on, a safe tactical bound behind. He legged it across the open street, refusing to acknowledge the floating death machine to his left and the fact that it could snuff out his existence in the blink of an eye, and then he was in the alleyway. Suddenly he was plunged into shadow, and his eyes adjusted just in time to see Kronig's insanity at work. The sergeant had managed to sneak his machine up to the A-grav, which hovered several feet off the ground, somehow managing to look bored as it observed the adjacent street and was reaching out with his hydraulic claw arm. Kinney couldn't believe his eyes. How the sergeant could dull his servos enough to be that quiet, he would never know, and he stepped forward to lend a hand. His left leg locked, much to his frustration, and Kinney teetered before slumping sideways. His shoulder scraped against the wall, and Kinney was stuck leaning at an awkward angle as the A-grav turned at an alarming speed. There was an awful scraping of metal as the hydraulic claw scrabbled for purchase, and Kinney felt a rush of pure terror as he strained to unlock his leg joints. The optical cluster on top of the A-grav swiveled about before fixing its compound lenses on Kinney's rigid form as leg muscles burned with lactic acid. The craft swiveled a short-barreled cannon into place, locking its aim onto M841. Kronig's claw scratched frantically across the curved hull of the A-grav, then clamped onto a strut or an access step or something, and pulled down. The vehicle tilted at an angle, fired, and attempted to lift higher into the air. The conventional shell blew up in front of Kinney's feet, shockwave buffeting him, his carapace showered with chips of brick and concrete. Kinney closed his eyes, and noticed with dismay that his shield hadn't engaged, despite diagnostics showing some charge remaining. The enemy pilot probably couldn't see D-99 directly underneath its machine, and tried to take off, but Kronig held it there, his power suit's leg hydraulics extending involuntarily as it pulled along the ground. Foot claws scraped on concrete as Kronig bucked spasmodically, attempting with one arm to jerk the thing down. He realized, as his leg joint popped into motion, that his squad leader was trying to align the center mass of the spacer vehicle with his shoulder-mounted implosion cannon. Kinney took aim with both of his weapons to assist, but needn't have bothered. The donkey kicked, its percussive boom sounding impossibly loud in the alleyway, and a wave of dust rippled out from Kronig's position as his leg unit rocked back under recoil. It gutted the A-grav, which jerked, spewing shrapnel and a strange grey goo from a massive exit point that punched out of its upper armour. The shrapnel was travelling so fast it triggered the hard shields, causing it to ricochet wildly all over the place, contained by protective shields that utterly failed to protect their owner. The spacer machine slowly drifted to the ground, the dead weight of it dragging Kronig to his knees as he tried to release the hydraulic claw from the dead object. His close combat attachment had gouged an ugly furrow into the small craft, and now servos whined in protest as he tried to tug it out. Kinney was impressed by how the sergeant had got within the boundary of the shields to execute the machine, and hurried over to pull him away from the thing, which had now caught fire and proceeded to burn with a peculiar green flame. The impact felt like being kicked in the back by a Toro, and the private sprawled, limbs flailing as he landed cockpit down, monitor display filled by an extreme close-up of broken concrete. The MOG scraped along the deck before coming to a halt near the sergeant, who was still ripping chunks of metal away from the A-grav, trying to free his arm. Kinney coughed, cancelled the alarms that screeched in his ears, and attempted to stand. His shields were definitely gone, and blood trickled down his forehead for the second time in recent memory as he struggled to rise to his knees. "They snuck up on us too," he thought, cursing himself. "I should have been covering the rear." A shearing of metal signaled the sergeant standing up, and the old man extended his leg hydraulics to shoot over Kinney with all his weapons at an unseen foe. "Stay low," he growled into the radio, to which Kinney responded with a grunt. He managed to get to one knee and stayed there, having no room to manoeuvre further, being so close to Kronig and the ruined A-grav that had now turned into an inferno of light, exotic chemicals turning the flames a myriad of colours. Kinney could do nothing but watch as his sergeant, silhouetted by the fire, unleashed everything he had on the enemy behind, sending 84mm heat and 25mm AP shells downrange as fast as he could. An incoming shell, conventional in nature, slammed into the sergeant and his shields crackled as he was lifted from his feet and thrown into the flames, a black cloud of smoke inhabiting the space where he just stood. The blind panic had receded incredibly fast in the young trooper, and Kinney started to rise as soon as Kronig disappeared from sight. He turned, painfully slowly, sensing that something was wrong in the grinding way his suit juddered. But he grit his teeth and pushed on anyway, determined to take up the slack and fight the off-worlder. Another impact slammed into him mid-turn, shearing off his left weapon arm, and he spun, landing face down, in exactly the same position he was 10 seconds ago, except now he had his arms pinned under him. Kinney snarled in frustration, spittle spattering against his display, before glancing down to his internal temperature gauge. It rose at an alarming rate, and he could feel the heat inside the cockpit already. He wriggled ineffectually to free his arms, and the powered gauntlets just scraped under his armoured bulk, as flames began to lick the edges of his external vision. Kinney settled for a moment, at a loss at what to do, and simply said to himself, "I'm on fire." Blake skidded down the rubble slope, stance wide and centre of gravity low. Weight and momentum shredding a path down the steep north face of the necropolis. She found herself wishing that Eddie possessed a pair of arms, so she could balance herself in a superior fashion. "It," she reminded herself, "is a machine. It balances itself." Her little group had narrowly avoided the artillery fire that even now pounded the hillside they had previously fought upon, and she held hope that the other legs could keep up as she blazed a completely undisciplined trail down into the valley. The newfound agility with which she could control her mech was exhilarating, and Blake could simply not understand why the practice of operating on 100% neural load was frowned upon. Eddie approached the bottom of the slope, a wonky streak of absolute devastation in her wake, and arrested her momentum with a jump. The heavy Toro slammed to the deck, making it shudder as leg hydraulics squealed under the stress. She stood to her full height and turned her torso, training Eddie's guns back up the obvious path she had torn through the Holy Land, covering the descent of her subordinates. The retreat had been the most overtly wild action she had ever conducted in her life. If the combination of noise, dust, and the new linear feature that had been gouged into the hillside didn't get them noticed, then nothing would. Blake chewed her lip impatiently as the remnants of her platoon, no, her entire company, made their way down the hill in single file. The Mogs would skid and bump a few feet, performing little hops to slow themselves down, letting their weight dig into the ground before starting again. She looked at how far they had to go and calculated that they would be down to her within 30 seconds. Blake eyed the spacer fortress warily, though it seemed to be ignoring them, and counted her remaining Mogs as they filed in. It was bleak. She attempted to figure out who was left by their body language alone, fancying that she could recognize them by their individual quirks by now. Mirante led the way, always the professional, moving as close to prescribed arcs as possible, keeping good spacing, doing everything right. Behind her was Markovich, and his machine bounded and slid down the slope like an excited puppy. The veteran trooper seemed to be the least affected by the insane events of the previous hours, and she hoped that his attitude wouldn't become complacent. There were times to rush like the hells were upon you, and times to focus, and he had to be able to recognize the difference. "You can talk. Hypocritical much." Lagging some way behind was another of Mirante's squad, one of the triplets, as they'd been known around base. Even fresher than Kinney, the three young men had been inseparable, being as they went through training in the same unit. It was unusual for so many men from a training platoon to stay together in an operational unit, and to be honest, Blake had always found it difficult to tell them apart. It chilled her slightly to think that two of the three were dead, and that she'd be somehow condemning both of them by guessing which of the triplets was still alive, limping down the slope as she stood there waiting. Blake decided to leave him anonymous for now. Bringing up the rear was Braga. Like a miniature version of Blake, he moved aggressively and with confidence, throwing his mog down the slope in a manner most would deem reckless, stopping every now and again to allow the triplet to make progress, while the older trooper covered their platoon's rear. There was no sign of Machado, no sign of Kronig, no sign of Kinney. "First squad, this is Eddie, radio check," she sent on the command net. Static. "Rest up here for a few minutes," Blake sent to everyone over the squad net. "Get some water in you. Reorg under Corporal Mirante." A chorus of tired affirmatives, except Braga. Braga sounded pissed. "Mirante, I want an ammo state. Also, where is Private Machado? I didn't see him follow the sergeant." Mirante gave her ammo state. She also informed the captain that Machado had died shortly after Kronig and Kinney had left. He had been confused as to where to go, spying the pair race off up the hill, and had been caught in the first barrage as the platoon retreated around the hill. Braga had seen him die. He was vowing to kill the pair of traitors, as he now saw them, endlessly chanting a death oath in the old tongue. Blake was only half listening. The captain kept her eyes fixed on the slope, homing in on every movement like a hawk searching for mice. There was still a hunter out there, a shadow. Armbruster would have survived the artillery, she was sure of it. Simply standing in place in the open, waiting to get shot, made her skin crawl. She glanced at the fortress again, and it was in the process of unpacking some new hardware she had yet to see deployed. A multi-barreled launcher extended from its upper hull, protruding from a hatch that sat flush against the plating. The barrels rotated swiftly, and the distortion below the grav plates intensified, so that the ground underneath the mighty machine resembled nothing more than a blur. This, Blake realized, was to counter the recoil. The fortress shuddered as it launched projectiles over the hill, each barrel coughing in sequence in the direction of the Corvid artillery. To Blake, it looked like a giant hissing cockroach giving birth to explosive larvae, and she was disgusted by it. There was something abhorrent about the offworlders, on some instinctual level that she didn't want to put into words, and Blake would be glad to be away from them. The captain couldn't see the effect on target, but the spacer counter-battery fire was short, just a couple of salvos. Then it ceased. Several clouds of smoke slowly mushroomed up, rising from the far side of the valley, where the Corvids had sighted their artillery. The incoming from their position ceased. Blake glanced at her chronograph. 5 minutes had passed. "Kronig, this is Eddie. If you can hear me, proceed on mission. We will RV at Central Command. Out." She couldn't afford to wait any longer. Kronig and Kinney had chosen to abandon the mission, and now she would abandon them in turn. The objective came first. "Okay," Blake said, pausing unexpectedly to clear her throat. She coughed and swallowed, then wiped her nose, feeling a trickle there. Blood stained the back of her glove, and she stared. "Okay," she repeated on the squad net, checking her compass again. "We'll proceed northwest as planned. We're still on point to reach Central by nightfall. I will lead. The rest of you just be ready to support in a contact. Acknowledge." Another chorus of affirmatives came in. Blake turned her back on the necropolis and started to ascend the outer slope of the Grey Valley, squinting in the darkness of her command pit into the midday sun.